Eyes to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So it's even worse than you think. Until now, radio is where we're going. That is the title of our perfect guest for now. We are hosting David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist, frequent MSNBC contributor. I always race to the screen when I see him, tracking Trump for 29 years. He first followed him in 1988, delineating the extraordinary grift and con, contributing deep delving revelatory narrative to public discourse. We thank the lad. And what we got to know to have a democracy. He's a distinguished visiting lecturer at Syracuse University College of Law and Whitman School of Management on property tax and regulatory law of the ancient. Strange hums coming from Berkeley, but I think it's okay. And he has been inching the ring of power into the crack of doom for a long time, so let's join him in this task. His latest book is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. DCReport.org is his splendid news organization, and David K., C-A-Y, Johnston.com is his website. Welcome, David.
Well, thank you for having me.
No, it's so perfect. It's kismet, because we rescheduled you from a little while ago to today. It's so perfect. I mean, do you feel like your long, toiling labor is now it's really spiraling out into mainstream collective?
Well, there's a long way yet to go, but really important things happened this week, a number of them, and one of them that we're especially proud of at DC Report is that on June 15th, I wrote a piece about how to make Donald Trump's tax returns public, and that was a criminal investigation, an indictment of him by the state of New York or the Manhattan County District Attorney. And we were rebuffed and told to go away. And, I mean, the PR person for the state attorney general's office, and I say this having been a journalist for more than 50 years, treated us with the most utter nastiness and contempt when we just, you know, wanted to interview them and refused to make the attorney general available. Well, they have now clearly started a criminal investigation of Donald Trump's tax affairs connected to his phony charitable foundation. And the reason that's important, there's two things. One, Trump's power to pardon and to commute sentences does not extend to the states. It's only for federal crimes. And secondly, if the state of New York indicts Donald Trump, that will change the entire ball game of what is going on here with this utterly incompetent, unqualified, dishonest man in the White House.
I love that. And a quip artist friend of mine, Virginia Daly, says, Trumpty Dumpty falling off his wall and all the president's men couldn't put him back together again. We go, yes.
Well,
right.
All the president's men, or at least all the president's felons, are now starting to turn on him because they realize that they are better off if they cooperate with prosecutors than if they do what Paul Manafort's done, which is just sit there silently.
Right, and David Pecker was just granted immunity.
Right.
A publisher.
Yeah, he gets a free walk for all sorts of crimes he's apparently committed because he's willing to flip on the president. And what did Donald Trump say today? He thinks there ought to be a law that would prevent you from flipping. Well, the only people I know who would ever argue that are mob bosses.
Right. Well, this is important because I've been excavating not only your splendid book, I encourage everyone absolutely to get It's Even Worse Than You Think, and then we just add Until Now, we're working on it. But also, you know, back to your 2016 Politico article, which was great about Trump and the mob. You've been tracking this for a long time. I put excerpts up on the website and everything, but yeah, I mean, he's, you know, Roy Cohn, the most evil man in America, as we know from, you know, Angels in America and history. And then, you know, he worked for Senator Joe McCarthy, and then you say he's a mob consigliere with clients including Fat Tony Salerno, boss of the Genovese crime family. I'm reading from you, the most powerful mafia group in New York, and Paul Castellano, head of what was said to be the second largest family, the Gambinos. And their indictment, on which Fat Tony Salerno was convicted in 1988 and sent to prison where he died, lists the nearly $8 million contract for concrete at Trump Plaza, right? I mean, you go on like that. So it's like,
this was Trump Plaza apartments in New York, yes.
Yeah, right. Right, and the ready mix concrete, just as a literal fact and a metaphor, do you want to just give us a brief tour of ready mix concrete and the mob connection, which you delineate so well, and that is now may well come sure. up into light, right? Yeah.
Well, it is common practice now to build high rise concrete structures, but when Donald Trump started work in 1979 on what became Trump Tower, it was very unusual. And most buildings in New York are steel girder construction. The reason Donald chose concrete, I think the record is quite clear on this, was the concrete business was controlled by Fat Tony Salerno and Paul Castellano, these two mobsters. The Teamsters Union, who drive the trucks that bring the ready-mix concrete, where they put it in the back of the revolving truck and you got about 90 minutes to unload it before it starts to harden, we're under the control of the mob, and the mob's guy, John Cody, is central to this story, which I tell at great length in my book, The Making of Donald Trump, my 2016 biography of him.
Wow.
The other unions that were involved were all, in one way or another, controlled by the mob. Now, if you're building with ready-mix concrete, the most important thing is you have to keep continually pouring concrete nonstop. Well, during the middle of the construction of Trump Tower in 1983, there was a concrete strike in New York City, and this was a mob-orchestrated event. Literally every project in New York stopped. If you had ordered concrete for a new sidewalk in front of your house, or you were putting up a high school, the concrete flow stopped except at one project, Trump Tower. And ever since then, it should have been eminently clear to people that Donald Trump is mobbed up. And, of course, Donald Trump's father, Fred, had a business partner in the Trump Organization named Willie Tomasello, who was identified by law enforcement in published reports, in their own reports, not news accounts, but their official reports on organized crime, as a front for the Genoveses and the Gambinos.
Right. And again, just into now and from that really great article, I mean, it was part of what convicted Fat Tony Salerno, and the concrete business was central to the case. It also proved extortion, narcotics, rigged union elections that you're talking about, and murders by the Genovese and Gambino crime families. And what
well,
Michael Chertoff...
When the prosecutor got the convictions, he walked out in front of the federal courthouse in New York and he said, "We have now taken effective action against the most vicious, murderous crime family in America." These are the people Donald Trump was doing business with, because just remember, there's fine people.
Right, exactly. But also the crucial thing of your long work, that great article, also to now, is that it's been an amazing history of evading accountability. You know, just everybody else gets indicted, everybody else gets whatever, but no, just gliding through. And that's what is really remarkable about now, and you've been speaking about, and what we want to join with you on, is how dangerous this time is, because we don't compare him to any animal because it will only diss the animal, but a vampire squid maybe, but backed into a corner. What do you encourage all of us to do to navigate the danger of Trump's reactivity?
Well, listen, there's one crucial, important thing. And I've been very critical of people who don't support Trump or oppose Trump for griping and moaning and posting things on the internet and not acting.
Right.
The only thing that matters is voting. Everybody in America lives within 100 miles of a flippable congressional district. And, you know, we have a minority party that is in control of the entire federal government and many, many state governments. And it's in control because, well, the Republicans have been serious and dedicated and have worked for decades to ensure their control, even though they are dwindling as a representative of the whole country. The Democrats have twiddled their thumbs. Progressives and liberals have done very little of the serious, often boring work that needs to be done. So if you actually care, then here's what you should do. you should, there's a website, I'm sorry I can't remember the name of it at the moment, of congressional districts that appear to be flippable. Find out which one is closest to you, get a hold of the people trying to change that district. If you can afford to send money, send money. But more importantly, if you can work, volunteer, go to that district, people will arrange for you to do things like knock on doors. Few things are more effective than people knocking on doors. Get people in that district registered to vote, and then take off Monday and Tuesday of election week, have signed up in advance, go there and drive people to the polls. And by the way, you have to have two people in a car for legal reasons. But go there and make sure that people go to the polls. We had roughly 100 million Americans not vote in the 2016 presidential election that was decided by 77,000 people in three states. If you, and my answer to the other side of this is, look, if you can't get off your ass, open up your wallet if you've got any money in it, but certainly move your feet to do things, then, you know, welcome to a future in which Donald Trump is just the beginning of what will happen, and kiss your liberties and your freedoms goodbye. The people who want to make this a mandatory Christian nation, who want to control women's bodies, who want to have a huge military that goes around killing children in Yemen and things like that, they're going to win. So stop going on the internet to post. You know, put your time into action. You know, this is a variation of the great insight of F. Scott Fitzgerald in his last unfinished novel. Action is character.
Yes. No, that's great. And again, to any of our progressive team, hello out there, who go, nah, 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 the Democrats are the same. It's like, no, you can't afford that now. The whole world, you know, it's
And they're not the same. To the extent that they're the same because the campaign finance laws we wrote after Watergate have backfired. And I was one of the people covering that in the mid-70s. And I look back on it now and realize that, you know, we all naively thought if we just fixed the campaign finance rules in this way with disclosure, it would fix everything. Well, we were wrong. We need to go back and revisit all of that. You know, my wife was asked about whether she would be interested in Congress. And she was sort of, you know, flattered and thought that was cool. And I just looked at her and I said, well, I just want you to think what you're going to spend your days doing. You're going to spend your days, let's say you get on the banking committee, raising money from the big bankers, because otherwise you're not going to get reelected. She went, oh, you're right. That's horrible. And my wife is the kind of person who should be in Congress. But, you know, she wouldn't touch it at all because of exactly that. We have a lot of work to do to fix this system. And right now, we have an administration that is going after gay and lesbian and transsexual and queer people. There's no mistaking what they're doing here. They want to get rid of Roe v. Wade, and they're apparently going to trick Susan Collins and Senator Murkowski into believing that because they won't outright repeal Roe v. Wade, it's okay to prove them to the Supreme Court. Today, we have Betsy DeVos trying to use money that should be used for textbooks to buy guns in schools. This is like, you know, folks, wake up. Your country's being taken away from you, and you need to get off your tail, knock on doors, and get people to the polls. That's what matters. And, you know, the Republicans, they're working real hard at making sure they have a ground game and they turn people out.
And they're closing polling stations in Georgia. And, I mean, all the nefarious...
For people who haven't heard, that is one of the most outrageous things going on. There are seven polling places that are predominantly black. One of them is apparently almost 99% black, that are being closed because they don't comport with the Americans for Disabilities Act. That is a 1970s law, and they have known that these places were non-compliant since the 70s. But it's only right now, when a black woman is the Democratic Party candidate for governor, that these crackers are trying to make sure black people can't vote. And we know in other places, things like, you know, not having enough voting machines, long lines, moving polling places at the last moment, and, of course, challenges. And if you're listening and you're a lawyer, even if you're retired, you absolutely need to go sign up and volunteer and right now start studying the election law in your jurisdiction, because it's going to be very important in November that we have lots of lawyers ready to go into court on behalf of people whose right to vote is challenged. And I expect that will even happen in California.
Right. No, there's so much on the line that you delineate in book. And when you mentioned Betsy DeVos, I mean, it's hard to not have conniption fits as, you know, exactly what you said, but also her, you know, possibly even more horrendous or equally horrendous brother, Eric Prince, head of what was known as Blackwater, now, you know, in charge of mercenary privatization of the war in Afghanistan. It's like, but, well, I mean, because pretty much as you delineate and as we kind of feel and you're giving us facts, you know, whatever the most churlish, cruel war on life, you know, stupid, creepy thing that could be done, that this administration will do that. And we do want to go down that line. And then, you know, that, you know, as you mentioned, I'm pretty sure it's you that mentioned that Manafort chose Pence, right? So, you know, just as a little sideline.
Not me, but other people have said that the person who brought Pence to the attention of Donald Trump was Paul Manafort. I haven't covered that, but other people have certainly asserted that. But, you know, here's Manafort, a man who is in deep financial trouble, who takes a job at no pay, but we know he was in there promoting the interests of the Kremlin, the pro-Kremlin Ukrainian position that was changed in the Republican platform. I mean, nobody here cares about that, but it matters a lot to the Russians and to Putin. And we know that Manafort was the paid agent, $60 million of money from the pro-Kremlin Yanukovych government that was overthrown, literally popularly overthrown by the people. And, you know, we have Donald Trump whose son gets this email that the Russian government wants to help him, and yet he goes around saying there's no collusion. And I turn on the TV and there are all these people saying there's no evidence of collusion. There's no, what are you talking about? There's no question there was collusion. There's only a question of, does it rise to the level of a crime?
Right. Yeah, and then for those, you know, again, nuance, complexity. I mean, no, I know Noam Chomsky is like, oh, the press is too much obsessed with the Russia thing. We're missing more horrors. But you, in your capable deep delvingness, are like, we can do all of this. We want to pay attention to Russia, but also not be distracted from where everything's being stripped. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I understand that some people think that the Russia matter is getting too much attention. I just don't share that view, and it's not that I have something against the Russians. I live in the real world where we have friends, we have enemies, we have frenemies out there. And Vladimir Putin is a man who has publicly said, you can read his own words, that democracy is a joke, that government should be run by people like him, who are essentially tyrants, that he wants to destabilize Europe and NATO. He wants to rebuild the old Soviet empire. The leaders of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia have told everybody who will come and listen that they are afraid that Russians will just show up one day and take over the way they did in Crimea. This is a man who not only murders his political opponents, but had the most dangerous, most threatening one he had, Navalny, shot to death at a place where he knew the video cameras would show the Kremlin in the background so that nobody would miss the message. You challenge me, I'll kill you with impunity. Well, this man is no friend of democracy and of the United States, and yet Donald Trump praises him and publicly said in Helsinki that he was taking Vladimir Putin's word over that of the entire American intelligence establishment. There are a lot of things wrong with our intelligence establishment. I've written stories, I've exposed spies and foreign agents, but those people's conduct, no one has ever shown to be unpatriotic. Donald Trump's statement in Helsinki is astonishingly unpatriotic. And yet the Republicans will not stand up to him. They have cravenly bowed down to him. And remember what Omarosa said, in the fall of 2016, we will all bow down to Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, we wonder at this kind of fulcrum moment, we don't know, but will some people desert? You know, will some people, you know, like the splendid movie 7 Days in May, all these things are really useful, where at a certain point it's gone too far, and even the evildoers in the coup go, up, can't go any further. Maybe. I know it looks unlikely, but maybe.
It's really good you brought up that movie. You know, Rod Serling wrote the screenplay for that.
And your daughter's working on a Rod Serling thing.
You know, she's published a third of her very serious biography of Rod Serling. And Rod Serling, all of his screenplays and movies had a lot of humanity. He wrote one of the original screenplay, which was not produced, for Planet of the Apes. And in it, you would never have seen Charles Heston saying, "Get your damn dirty paws off me." He would have said something like, you know, "I'm sure with time and discussion, we can become friends." But 7 Days in May is actually a good, people haven't seen it, this is a good time to go get it and see it. Yep. Because it's about an attempted coup and what happens and how it's unfoiled, and particularly the role of a drunk U.S. senator in the middle of the Texas desert.
Right.
But it is actually relevant to our time right now. This is a time when, if you enjoy your freedoms and you believe in the idea that we can govern ourselves, we don't have to have a king or a czar or a pharaoh to tell us what to do, well, you either stand up now or you condemn the future, your children, your grandchildren, if you have them, and beyond, to a horrible future. I'm very serious about this, and I'm somebody who's very optimistic. Nobody has 8 children unless they're a very serious optimist. But there are moments when you have to act, and this is one of those moments. Either act or don't ever complain again about your freedoms.
Thank you. No, I think 7 Days in May is so good, and I'd forgotten that Rod Serling wrote the screenplay, and it was a favorite book by Fletcher Knebel of JFK's as well.
Yeah.
So it's also that idea that when the collective psyche, like a glass of water, is saturated with salt or sugar, like it dissolves, and then you just add one more grain and it all falls out. And I'm thinking that the collective culture is so saturated with lies, all it takes is one more grain, until it falls out. And that's kind of what you've been dedicated to.
In this case, one of the things we have going for us is Robert Mueller, who was the second longest serving director of the FBI, who there's not a hint of the least impropriety anywhere in this man's life. Robert Mueller is a serious, determined, highly competent man. What I'm worried about is that the team of prosecutors he brought in, these 17 people who all walked away from million and probably multi-million dollar annual jobs as lawyers for a prosecutor's salary, are going to have all their work undone by Donald Trump. I mean, he made it very clear today that as soon as we get past these elections, he's probably going to fire Jeff Sessions, and Chuck Grassley has signaled that he's open to having a new attorney general, but not till after the elections. And a new attorney general will move to shut down the Mueller probe. That's why it's absolutely crucial that the state of New York proceed, that they develop the evidence, and if it warrants it, which I'm positive that it will in spades, that they indict Donald Trump. Now, that's going to lead to a big constitutional crisis. What happens when New York authorities, go to the White House and seek to arrest Donald Trump? I think that's something we need to discuss. Remember, Donald Trump said he could walk onto Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and he wouldn't lose any of his supporters. But would law enforcement allow him to walk away? Would they say, "Oh, you're the president. That's okay. You can murder people"?
Well, also my favorite bumper sticker from Nixon Watergate was "Impeach the cocksucker." So that was good. And again, this kind of rising up and saying reverence, and similarly the attempt to block the nomination or the hearings on Brett Kavanaugh, crucial. A lot of these are against all odds, but democracy thrives on against all odds. It's kind of the spirited quality. And you've got one of the things I so value about your contribution is that here you've been exploring the seamiest, ugliest underworld corruption realm. and yet you maintain a jaunty form of expression. I'm just very grateful. Again, when navigating the underworld, it's like Wendell Berry says, be jaunty even though fully informed. And you're pretty good that way, at maintaining your jauntiness with your splendid wife and your 8 children.
Well, you know, back in the almost 40 years ago, when I was digging into the LAPD for the LA Times, after I left the San Francisco Bureau of the LA Times and went down to LA, it was something the paper didn't want to do, and there was a lot of internal fighting over it. But because of my work, all the things we know about today have come to pass. You know, the knowledge that the LAPD was not the world's most efficient, effective, and honest police department, that it was, in fact, brutal to people of color, that they weren't solving crimes, and all sorts of other stuff. But one person, happened to be me, but it could have been other people, had to first open the door and cast light into the room. There are lots of people who will come into the room once that happens. It's just most people don't like opening doors into rooms where they don't know what's there and going inside. And in this case, with Trump, we now have a bunch of people who are working at opening the doors to all the lies and the secrets and the numerous crimes Donald Trump has committed. So what matters now is that people take that and go with it. The people around Trump are going to fold bit by bit as prosecutors come to them. I can't imagine any of these people around Donald Trump saying, oh, I'm going to prison for the next 20 years because I love Donald Trump. We saw Michael Cohen, you know, his super loyal, I'd take a bullet for him guy turn. But all of that will be for naught if we don't get a new Congress. And, you know, Max Boot, a right-wing Republican who started out in his 20s as an editorial page writer for the Wall Street Journal, he has said it is the duty of every honest Republican to vote out every Republican because they won't stand up to Trump. Bill Kristol, a man who is almost always wrong and who was totally in bed with the Cheney crowd, Bill Kristol is out there saying we have to get a new Congress. Well, here's your opportunity. Do it, folks. And if you don't, you know, well, tough luck to you. Kiss your freedoms goodbye.
And then just a scenario I want to just sort of put for possible animation, which is, yes, Democratic Congress is the sine qua non. I mean, it's got to be the next thing. And then I liked on Twitter somebody was saying, and then first impeach Pence, within days impeach Trump, Speaker of the House becomes President. The House can pick anybody; it doesn't have to be Nancy Pelosi.
There is an order of succession that is the speaker, but if both Trump and Pence are out, I think what we need is a caretaker president who's going to be a sort of neutral party and a placeholder, because there'll be terrible problems if there's a change of parties. I mean, I would tell the Democrats, you know, find yourself a responsible grown up Republican and put him in the office, because otherwise he'll come back against you.
What about Joe Biden as just a soothing, decent guy for 2 years?
Yeah, except he'd be seen as being a Democrat. But you know, you've got raised another issue. We shouldn't skip over. If the issue that leads to Trump being removed, and I'm dubious that there will ever be 67 votes in the Senate to convict him. I know Lawrence O'Donnell, whose show I was on last night, said, "Oh yeah, we'll get the votes." I may be risky, but. Assuming that we do get the votes and that one of the high crimes and misdemeanors is that he is a Russian agent, how could we allow Mike Pence, who is a beneficiary of this and who was willfully blind to be kind in the Michael Flynn case, where the national security advisor to the president was a Russian agent and has confessed to being such, the Turkish folks he was working for were Russian interests. If you're going to remove Trump, I think you have to remove Pence, not because of his politics, which would be totally improper, but because he is also a beneficiary of the Kremlin's involvement in our elections.
And, yes, hold that thought. We're going to take a very, very short 20-second musical break. Our splendid Perfect For Now guest is David K. Johnston. I'm Caroline Casey, and we will be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chiny, 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 come blow my chiny home.
Welcome back, Allies to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. And our perfect kismet guest today is David K. Johnston. He has been writing about and deep delving investigating Donald Trump since 1988, really. There's much you can find at his website, David K. with a C, David K. Johnston. And also DCReport.org is a splendid news organization. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yes, now back to impeaching.
At DC Report, we don't run ads. We don't sell our mailing list. This is pure public service journalism. We rely on donors. The editors of it are former masthead editors or top reporters at the LA Times, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and some other volunteers. But it still costs us about even the little operation we run still costs us about $6,000 or $7,000 a month, and we depend on volunteers for that.
I absolutely encourage all of our dedicated citizens to contribute to DCReport.org. And also, do you follow Reveal?
No, I don't.
It's a teammate. There are so many colleagues just one inch apart, and I'd say DC Report is splendid. Reveal, the Center for Investigative.
I'm aware of it, but it's not on my.
Put it on your bookmark. I mean, it's a teammate of yours because they, like you, do deep delving that actually changes things. You know, they do such a good, thorough job. Anyway, just a shout out to all teammates, Pacifica Radio and Reveal and DCReport.org and DavidKJohnston.com. Now back to impeaching Pence, and then there's many things we want to cover, but impeaching Pence, yes, we were right in the middle of a thought there.
Well, because Pence seems to have, just willfully looked the other way at a minimum to what was going on with the Russians during the transition, I think that if you remove Trump, you have to remove Pence. But I then think there's a real problem the Democrats will face. They've got to find somebody who everybody will see as a neutral party to be a placeholder president. I'll throw out one name that occurred to me during the break, Colin Powell. Hmm. Nobody disputes that he's a decent man. He got hornswoggled in his testimony before the UN by the Cheney crowd, but that's just a mistake, and he owned up to it, that he got taken by them when they were lying to everybody. But here's a decent, serious man. He's a person of color. He has a distinguished record. There's no hint of any scandal anywhere in his life. And he'd be the perfect kind of placeholder person. Unfortunately, he's not an office holder in the House. And
but the House can pick anybody, can't they?
I do not believe so. I believe they have to follow the order of succession. But I may be wrong. As much as I've studied our Constitution, I haven't paid that close attention to the issue of succession.
I think we want to grease those skids because I think they can pick anybody, and I think this is good to animate backstage and have this conversation going. That's a very intriguing.
They can pick anybody as vice president for sure. We saw them pick Nelson Rockefeller, who famously said, I remember I was in Lansing, Michigan as an investigative reporter for the Detroit Free Press, and I'm driving along in my car, and Nelson Rockefeller is being questioned as he steps out of some hearing. He says, this is 1973 when cops and newspaper reporters made maybe $15,000 to $20,000 a year. And he said, well, you take your average steel worker who's making $60,000 a year. And you realized how totally out of touch the man was.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes, well, okay, so Colin Powell, okay, we put that in the memosphere as kind of intriguing, right? A decent
somebody
reassuring.
A neutral placeholder. You can't put Nancy Pelosi, no. dedicated public servant she is, if you put her in, that's just like asking the voters to come and whack you with a 2x4.
Or Joe Biden. Okay, I like the idea of Uncle Joe as just a soothing. But Colin Powell is a intriguing, brilliant thought, because it would, you know, he's a grown up, and it would reassure the rest of the world going,
and like all the best generals, he's a diplomat. I mean, war is the last solution, and Donald Trump doesn't understand that. He thinks it's the first solution. And so as someone who is an experienced diplomat and negotiator, he will also be able to help rebuild our reputation around the world. And you think about this in this century, you know, first we put in this utterly incurious, ill-prepared George W. Bush because he's a likable guy and Al Gore is an automaton. Who shows his contempt for ordinary people at every step that he took. And we get into this horrible war in Iraq where we go after the person who, if you think Iran is our threat, we should not be trying to remove Iran's number one antagonist, Saddam Hussein, a guy who we put into power. And our reputation just is in tatters all around the world when everybody felt sorry for us after 9/11. I mean, just a total reversal run by because of incompetent ideologues in that administration. And we get in Barack Obama, not a particularly strong or tough president, but not one scandal, not one indecency in that administration. You notice there's not a single book out there that's a tell-all because there's nothing to tell. And then we get Donald Trump, who is unfit to be elected dog catcher, who is a screaming, stone-cold racist who has no contempt for the law, who talks and acts like what he is, which is a mob boss, and who's deeply mentally ill and delusional, as I've shown repeatedly. He's often delusional. And to just today, he said, even my enemies say that I shouldn't have appointed Jeff Sessions attorney general. Let's hear from them then. And once again, our reputation is in absolute tatters. And who is the beneficiary of Donald Trump's bellicosity and his incompetence and his mental illness? Why, it's first and foremost the Kremlin, and secondly, Beijing. And I've been on KPFA and other shows where I pointed out how our economic interests are just being run roughshod over by Beijing because of Donald Trump's utter and complete incompetence in economics, which he has a degree in from Penn, not a degree he earned, but one that was given to him.
Right. And then part of our convening to for strategy, a guest on show some weeks ago, Gary Lachman, says these are chaos magicians, that Trump is all that you say, the corrupt mob, you know, but is in a sense cipher, the Bannons and so on, they thrive on conflict and polarity, complete contempt for truth, those deemed to be poor or weak, which includes nature and the environment. So heat and polarity feeds the monster, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we have...
They are political versions of the family member who comes to the big dinner at the holidays or some event and immediately starts a game of uproar by setting off, you know, two people against each other. Uproar and disruption and chaos are their friends because they get people distracted so that they can do what they want to do. And in the case of Donald Trump, the Trump personally, who's a lazy guy, isn't the person, but the people he brought in have planted these political termites in the government. That's what my book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, is about. They are inside the government destroying the institutions you and I have spent huge amounts of money developing, especially our diplomatic corps.
Yeah, no termite. No, I know some people hanging on by their fingernails still in the State Department going, and even some people in the Department of Education, but exactly, termites
and folks, please don't give in. If you have to spend the next 2.5 years in absolute misery, consider it, you know, your duty to country. Lots of people died for this country. You know, I grew up in a household, my father was 100% disabled veteran of World War II, and he died much younger than he should have because of that war. But he never expressed a moment's regret about that. He thought it
about
was
what?
The right thing to do. About, what? You know, being about the fact that, the, you know, basically because of the Nazis, his life was shortened. You know, it was right. You do the right thing. No matter what the cost, you do the right thing. And right now, the right thing to do is to stand up to these people in effective ways through actions that matter.
Well, effective ways, and also we come to language, metaphor, and story crafting. You know, it's again, since the monster thrives on conflict, it's like another friend of show says, if you want people to get nothing done but hot, but heat and conflict, convince them they're on one side of something. You only get heat. What two needs is three, which is the unifying story. Come here, you know, because part of all the great work that you're doing and many teammates, you know, is, all right, you know, revolting. We got to know how horrible, but then two, withdraw our complicity and exhale it into a desirable vision, you know, and have a national conversation about what is wise governance, what is a wise leader, what are we electing here, and that engaged conversation, because as you mentioned, you know, there is the, you know, I love listening. You're my favorite MSNBC contributor, but it's also amusing to see Steve Schmidt and Nicole Wallace, and Joyce Aline, and or you mentioned, you know, even Bill Kristol is wrong about everything, you know, and but, you know, and Max Boot, you know, it's a curious time, and we can't afford to be addicted to finger wagging, whatever the thing is. We go, we know what you did was terrible, but come on over here, right? I mean, and part of, you know, I know you referenced George Lakoff, also a friend of show, you know, the rollback of regulations really should be called the rollback of protections.
Well, right? I mean, yes, and that's a very important point. You know, I don't teach there currently, but I taught at Syracuse Law School for 8 years regulatory law by teaching the regulatory law of the ancient world, so people understood regulatory law today. There is no such thing as deregulation. Don't ever let some politician say deregulation. Hmm. There is only new regulation, and the new regulations are all pro-business, anti-consumer. That's the important trend since Ronald Reagan came to office, actually since probably the end of the Carter administration. There certainly were needs for new regulation, but this has now been carried over into a let's help business at the expense of ordinary people, and the Trump administration, particularly in taking the sides of bankers against students in the student loan matters, in saying, hey, we're going to let the states regulate coal, which is going to lead to 1,400 unnecessary deaths a year. They won't happen for 10, 20 years, but then they'll come. These are all right things that work against the interests of people. We want to have regulation that's in the public interest. And the argument that there's too much regulation, go get a copy of Major League Baseball's rule book. You want to see regulation? Baseball regulates the weight of the ball, the contents of the ball, the outer cover of the ball, the color of the yarn, and how many stitches are on the baseball. Everything is regulated. The question is it regulated in the public interest, or is it regulated on behalf of interests that are narrow and maybe inimical to the public interest?
Right. Well, we you know, again, the protections, the Social Security, the remnants of the New Deal, but also, you know, in a sane society, the separating of children and babies from their parents with no structure in place at all should have been grounds for, like, you're gone. You are missing the whole point of life. You are so gone. Because this is something which must not recede. And I'm grateful to Michael Avenatti and Stormy Daniels and Michael Avenatti stepping into the reuniting children with babies. But that's a national shame, you know. And again, it's one of those qualities of, you know, will the heart and soul of this country rise up? And I think that's the invitation that it behooves all of us to go. You know, have you no decency, sir, finally? You know, but to go, that just...
But, you know, there are lots of people who aren't troubled by this, and the reason is they don't see people of color, people from foreign countries, as being people. Donald Trump effectively, you know, tried to dehumanize folks when he referred to people coming into our country as vermin. This is a classic tactic used by dictators and would-be dictators, and that's what Donald Trump is, by the way. If he thought he could just seize power and get rid of, no one rid me of this meddlesome Congress, he would do it. He can't do it, luckily, because we know from surveys the U.S. Military Officer Corps does not support Donald Trump. They recognize he's a buffoon. But if he could, he would, without a moment's hesitation. And we know that because, if nothing else, when President Xi in China moved to change the rules, so instead of 2 5-year terms, he could serve for life. Donald went, oh, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, no, I saw that. And he also loved the North Korean news lady. Going, we should get her a job on Fox. I think he actually said that. So it is the most vulgar. It's as though the backstage divine is saying, how simple do we have to make it? He looks like the devil. He's the most, you know, vulgar animation of murderous sociopathic American vulgarity that could be conjured, as you know better than most. And it's like amazing.
And yet, you need to think about this. 60 million of our fellow Americans voted for this man. The polls show consistently that among people who are eligible to vote, that's not voters, people are eligible, so that's a larger group, he's got the backing of a little under 40% of the population of this country. That is absolutely deeply disturbing and says a lot about our shortcomings as a democracy, how far we are from where the framers of our Constitution thought that we would be. And they wrote about this stuff. You know, they did projections about things that went up as late as about 1930, some of them, because I spent a lot of time reading their papers. And To them, the idea that someone like Donald Trump could be elected was something they actually considered. That's why our Constitution has some safeguards in it against a crazy person. The purpose of the Electoral College was in part to deny the office to a crazy person. Because we've never needed it for over 200 years, it's atrophied. And only a handful of the electors said, no, I'm not going to vote for this guy. The Electoral College had performed its function. Donald Trump would not be the president of the United States. Hmm. And they put in the emoluments. Emoluments was such an important concept as an anti-corruption measure that no gain, profit, benefit, gift should go to federal officials. That word is in the Constitution 3 times, and one of the 2 emoluments clauses is specifically aimed at the president, because the framers of our Constitution knew that in Europe there were monarchs who were secretly on the payroll of hostile foreign powers, and that they were therefore traitors. And I don't mean that in the strict legal sense. I mean it in the political and cultural sense. And here we have a man who is the kindest thing I believe a reasonable person can say about Donald Trump and the Kremlin is that he has divided loyalties. I believe he's effectively, whether knowingly or not, a Russian agent. But he has absolutely got divided loyalties. This is exactly what the Constitution was set up to protect against foreigners being in charge of our country. And Larry Tribe and his co-author, Matz, whose first name escapes me at the moment's book, To Impeach a President, will teach you about all of these issues. And Lawrence Tribe I don't think anybody, even people who don't agree with him, would dispute that he is our number one, or certainly one of our top 3 constitutional scholars in America.
Yes. And have you seen in you don't live in Washington, I just think you do, but there's a great artist, and I think the time for liberating hijinks is here, Robin Bell, who will be a guest on the show in some weeks, but Bell visuals, so over Trump Hotel, you know, he projects with light, felons welcome here.
Oh, yes, okay, yeah, well, there's one really good thing that's come about because of Donald Trump. We have had a revival of smart political art. I mean, there's lots of crappy political art out there.
Like what I sent you.
How much can you do with Barack Obama or even George W. Bush? But this guy, he has led to really smart political art. I posted some of it in my Twitter account, David CAYJ, from time to time. There's lots of it out there, and that's actually a good thing. I think that political cartoons and political art are very important to shaping the world. I mean, I wish that my friend Paul Conrad was still alive, because, boy, would Paul Conrad be having just a great time. You know, during his career, he did so many brilliant political cartoons, and, boy, would he have fun with Donald.
Right. Well, it's also that the piece by Mark Bryan that I sent you, The Nightmare, which is pretty good. Mark Bryan, a friend of the show, previous guest. Yep. Pretty good. But also, you know, remember the Celts thought that only satire could bring down the power abusing tyrant. And so the, again, how do we not feed the monster? I think satire sucks the chi away from the monster. And what you're bringing up, you know, that 40% supported it is confounding. But it's, you know, again, the crisis of America. America's always had a tough time distinguishing between the con man, you know, and the liberating trickster person.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I keep meaning to read Herman Melville's The Confidence Man because I hear it's really important because this goes way back. And, you know, even in movies made in America, there's a fantastic movie in a noir film in France in which the con man has this fantastic comeuppance. And in America, it was made as The Remarkable Mr. I can't remember, but the con man gets away. And so America, you know, the con man, the grifter, you know, to break that spell and go, no, that's not the liberator that you seek, you know. And that's why, you know, I was at the Republican convention. Maybe you were too. But that's where I sank to my knees, going, "Oh, we are so smoked. We're smoked by the con man, and on what should be our strong suit of story, and metaphor, and invitation." Because Hillary had no story craft, like at all, and it was like,
right. Oh. Well, one of the unfortunate things about America is that our education system was designed in the 19th century, the 1800s, and it was designed to produce drones to work in factories and offices, and not to develop critical thinking skills. So about 15% of American kids get a really fabulous first-rate education, and most of the rest, not at all. I often point out that I have had better conversations about culture, arts, politics, diplomacy, military matters, geopolitics, with a waiter in a rural Austrian restaurant, with a cop I met on the streets in Slovakia, a bartender in Spain, a hotel guest I stepped on the elevator with in Singapore, than the average American executive I've sat next to on first class in an airplane.
Right.
And it is astonishing how lacking in critical thinking skills and perspective large numbers of Americans who earn significant incomes are, as well as the general public. Way too much cynicism, way too much, all politicians are crooks. They're all bad. No, they're not. And you need to start distinguishing between the public servants, whether you like them or not, who are in office, and between people who are crooks. Otherwise, the crooks are going to win, and you're going to lose.
And I just want to add to your counsel there of the waiter in Barcelona, the whatever, is also the Bedouins in Syria. When I was there before it blew up, you know, hanging out with the Bedouins, they were so informed about American politics. Out there in the desert.
I spoke in December in Jordan at the Arab Reporters for Investigative Journalism Conference, which had like 600 people from countries all over the Middle East. And the conversations we had over meals and a glass of wine after the day, the depth of and nuance of thinking was just extraordinary. And I kept, you know, I said to some of them, you know, you could not have this conversation in America unless you were at a rather elite salon. It just can't take place. It couldn't even take place in the average metropolitan newspaper newsroom.
Right. Well, that's what, until now, we want the shifting thing. We just want to leave a little room for things to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways, just as a kind of, you never know. But yeah, absolutely. And what you bring in terms of nuance and, like, you know, of course you can't vote for the perfect person, but here's what you got to do. Step one, step two, step three. You know, the strategy of people who are really up against it and who are informed about America, exactly as you say, all praise to that. And then, patch me back in. Hello? Aha.
I'm here.
David. Oh, how wonderful. All right, so something unexpectedly quit, but you're here. Great. Wherever we were. Oh, that's right. I said, you know, let us pay homage on our way out to your colleague, Wayne Barrett, yeah?
Yes, well, Wayne Barrett was the first journalist to seriously get onto Donald Trump. I dedicated It's Even Worse Than You Think to him. He entrusted me with his Trump files when he knew he was dying. He died the day before Donald Trump took office. And a little thing I'll tell you about who Donald Trump is. In the 70s, Wayne Barrett, the best reporter in New York City, worked for the Village Voice. He couldn't write to save his life, but he could report better than anybody I've ever known in my life. And I'm including Cy Hirsch and Bob Lindsay and some other, Bartlett and Steele. Had incredible reporting doggedness. He was writing about what Trump was really doing in New York City and how corrupt it was, and Donald Trump offered him a multimillion dollar Trump Tower apartment for free.
Wow.
And that was when Donald Trump learned that everybody doesn't have a price. So when I came along in 1988, Donald knew enough to not try and offer me something, but he tried repeatedly to trap me into things so that he could accuse me of trying to blackmail him. He successfully did this to a Wall Street Journal reporter who did nothing wrong, but who put himself in a position that was untenable, even though he had done nothing wrong, and ruined his career. He went on to become a rich hedge fund guy. But Donald is someone who corrupts everyone around them, and if he can't corrupt them, he finds ways to compromise them, which goes to a fundamental principle in my life. If you never do something improper, nobody can get a lever on you.
That's a good place to close. So we want to send you lots of supportive woof, and people who want to support dcreport.org, please go there and do that. We are grateful for your long dedication and your essential contribution to public discourse right now, David K. Johnston, davidkjohnston.com. And again, just arousing, we want to prevent the Supreme Court nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. We want to protect as much land as possible, all those things, and we want to vote. So thank you very much, David K. Johnston.
Thank you for this hour. Take care.
Take care. Absolutely. And thank you, Carla West and the KPFA team. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, and we will reconvene next week. Woof.